This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Why Not Mint Money. I am Shashin from Mint's personal finance team, and today we talk about the booming finfluencer industry. For those who don't know, finfluencer is someone who commands a huge social media following and who makes content around finance, investing, and budgeting. They have become so big that even the finance minister had to issue a word of caution against those peddling investment advice on the internet. Today, I have invited Vivek Kaul to discuss about this topic. He is the author of Bad Money, and his articles appear regularly in Mint, BBC, Dainik Jagran, News Laundry, and Bangalore Mirror.
Welcome to Why Not Mint Money, a personal finance podcast where we help you understand basic money concepts and share strategies for you to build your wealth. So let's get started with your money journey.
Hi Vivek, thanks for coming to the show. How was your day? Tell me something about how you have been doing lately.
Nothing, yeah. I was just working on my weekly column on the, you know, the government's move to withdraw the 2000 rupee note. So I was working on that, and yeah, that's about it. So I'm not a very early riser, so I woke up only at around 9:30, and then I had my breakfast and I started writing. You know, basically the problem with freelancers is that if we don't work on a particular day, we don't get paid, you know, like you comfortable salaried people. So that's that.
So 2000 rupee note coming out of circulation is the perfect topic, I think, to begin our episode with. So today we're going to talk about the rise of finfluencer. Just 10 years ago, it was hard to believe that people would take advice from an Instagram reel or a YouTube video. But now it has become the main medium for people to take financial advice. So Vivek, what's your thought on the whole finfluencer boom that is happening?
Okay, see, you know, it's like people, I don't know how to put it, people were always dumb when it comes to money, okay? So what has happened is only the form has changed. Earlier, what would happen is we would sort of believe people around us, you know, the local uncle who sold us insurance or someone who worked for a stock brokerage. So these were the financial influencers, you know, it's very difficult to pronounce, the financial influencers around us. Now what has happened is because the mobile phone has become such an integral part of our lives and social media has become such an integral part of our lives. So, you know, we as people have moved on to taking advice from people who are offering advice on the social media. So I think the form has changed. It's not that this wasn't happening earlier. It was happening earlier, but it would happen at a very individual level, which is why it did not come out at a societal level. Now, because of Instagram and YouTube and other forms of social media, it's coming out at a societal level. So that is the difference. But I think as far as the relationship that people have with their money, I don't think that has changed.
So Vivek, can we come down to the specific point during the lockdown where all of this finfluencer community exploded in a big way? So what actually happened according to you during the lockdown?
See, I think there were a few things. First was the fact that we were all, you know, or not we all, but a lot of people, you know, people like us were stuck at home, right? So when you work out of home, you have a certain amount of freedom in the way you work, right? What happens in office is, you know, irrespective of whether you have work or you don't have work, you at least have to pretend on most days that you have work and sit in front of your desktop or laptop. But that doesn't happen at home, right? I mean, you have your work, and like, you know, I have my work. Once I finish with this podcast, I'll probably spend an hour and a half writing. And then, you know, I have the day pretty much to myself. But if, let's say, I was working in an office, that would not be the case. So, because people were working from home, they suddenly had time, okay? And time to do things. So, that was the first part. The second part that happened was that in the last few years, the cost of getting an internet connection has fallen dramatically. You know, I still remember when I had to pay almost 700, 600 rupees a month for 5 GB data on my mobile phone. Okay, 5 GB. Now I have, you know, and I probably get some 200, 300 GB or even unlimited. I don't even know what plan I have, and I pay, you know, probably the same amount of money or even lower. The third thing that I guess happened was, as I said, people had time, and then when you have time, and when you have a smartphone, and the fact that you are at home, you started gravitating, or rather more and more people took to social media. So Instagram took off, YouTube took off, and then, you know, while scrolling through things, you also came across these videos which sort of offered you advice. The fourth and the most important thing that happened was the fact that, you know, after the stock market crashed in late March 2020, it really took off. And then along with that, interest rates in fixed deposits fell to 5-6%, and the crypto market took off. So all these factors came together and essentially led to the rise of the financial influencer community. See, what happens is, you know, when the price of an asset is going up, you know, when stock prices are going up, or when the crypto prices are going up, it is very easy to go out and say, okay, now, you know, now is the time to buy, because everything is going up. So it is not like the influencers had any, you know, special knowledge or anything. They just went with the flow. They were smart enough to go with the flow. So
Vivek, let's come to the main point. That is it good? Is it bad? Is it ugly? What is your opinion on the rise of influencer? How does it affect the financial market? How does it affect people watching the videos? And later on, we can come to the influencer themselves, how they are earning money. But for now, let's begin with how is it affecting our financial markets?
See, it's like, you know, it's like this. When at least, you know, for me personally, when I invest money with someone, I need to have that level of trust in that individual. Okay, so let's say, you know, let me talk about the chartered accountant who used to manage, or at least still manages, some of my investments, and he's been managing my money for almost 15 years. But before I sort of, you know, gave him my money to manage, I had to be sure that he wouldn't take me for a ride. Okay, now to give you a very offbeat example, there is this Udupi hotel in Mumbai. It is the oldest Udupi hotel in Mumbai, in this place called Matunga, called Ramanayak. Now Ramanayak, if you go to eat there, okay, they have this line, or, you know, it's there, which says that the owner of this hotel also eats here. Okay, so to me, as an individual, when I give my hard-earned money to anyone to manage, the first thing I need to be sure of is that he will not invest my money in something that he wouldn't invest himself. Okay, that's the first and the most important thing, which is trust. So in my case, what happened was, I became friends with this chartered accountant first. And the agenda was not to sort of figure out whether he's right to sort of invest my money or not. But we just generally became friends. And once we became friends, I realized that this is a guy I could trust, right? And then I gave him my money, and then so the story goes. So, see, but what happens is that, you know, how do I trust a financial influencer? Or for that matter, anyone who is in the business of telling me this is where I should put my money, right? Now, when I want to invest in a mutual fund, I'm just giving you an example. I have, you know, at least 10 websites I can go to and figure out which are the good mutual funds going around. Okay. You know, I can simply look at the star rating if I don't want to break my head over it. Or I can, you know, narrow down and look at returns. I can look at 1 year return, 3 year return, 5 year return, rolling return, adjusted return, this return, that return, everything. But I can go into granular level detail. In case of a financial influencer, I have to just trust him. You know, he'll put out some random, you know, okay, this is what I did. You know, he'll put out some, you know, picture or a JPG file or a PNG file on the social media and say, this is how much return I have earned. And people fall for it. I mean, I just can't get my head around this. You know, how can you trust someone who is on the social media? I mean, and you don't know him, and you have no idea, you have no data basically, you know, how do you... So, which is why, you know, if you ask me personally, I would never invest my money in an insurance policy passing off as an investment, because it is next to impossible to figure out which is, you know, which are the investment-oriented insurance policies which have done well in the past, which is very easy to do in case of a mutual fund, or even in case of stocks. You know, if you want to figure out which stocks you want to invest in, then there is enough and more information out there. So this is the basic problem with influencers. How do I trust an influencer? Now, you know, this is a question that essentially these financial influencers need to answer. I mean, I am basically you know, someone who's written on investment for the last two decades. So I can tell you this, that it is very difficult for me to trust a financial influencer. And I, you know, I'm very, very surprised at the number of people who trust these financial influencers. So that is a huge factor for me. Also, you know, the question is that what is in it for them? You know, what is their incentive? You know, you wrote a very long piece recently in the Mint. Most of us, or rather most of the people who consume this influencer kind of content, don't really realize that in many cases, a lot of these influencers have been paid by brands to say what they are saying, right? I mean, you said that in your story in a very clear sort of way. Also, see, typically, you know, I don't have a problem with an influencer promoting brands. You know, all of us have to make money in some way. But then that has to be clear. You know, when you are saying something for which you have been paid for, you need to be upfront about it as well. So if you look at a lot of these feeds of cricketers or you know, actors, so when they collaborate with a brand, it is very clearly mentioned paid sponsorship. The problem is that, you know, it is easy to sell a perfume and a soap and say that there is a paid sponsorship involved. But it becomes very, very difficult to sell financial advice by saying that there is paid sponsorship involved, because, you know, it essentially negates the entire idea of advice. So, you know, the larger question then there is that is the entire business of being a financial influencer ethically right? So, I hope that answers your short question.
Yeah, that was really interesting. And the point you touch upon, how do we trust this people coming on YouTube and just talking about finance?
See, you know, it's like, so let me give you another example. You know, you have, so if you turn on to any of these business news channels, you have people all through the day coming there, you know, giving stock tips and stock advice and all that, right? Or you have mutual fund managers. Mutual fund managers cannot recommend individual stocks, but they recommend sectors and this and that. Now, you know, here's the thing. You know, if you are a mutual fund manager who's going out there and saying buy this, buy that or whatever, at least there is some data. You know, 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, I can go back and look at, okay, this guy said this. So was he right? Was he not right? Or how has his past performance been? So you have, you know, mutual fund data now is available for as long as a period of 20 years. So in this case, there is no agglomeration happening. You know, it's all out there in the dark. You know, I think these are the modern day versions of the uncles in our colonies who used to come and sell us insurance. This is the modern day version of that. You know, we would just simply trust, you know, those uncles because they sort of, you know, they were an important part of the community that we lived in. And this is again, you know, a modern day version of that.
Vivek, do you have any interesting anecdotes or videos that you remember about Finfluencer? Because I do have one. So there is...
Sure. Why don't you, you know, you are the right guy to share this.
So there is this guy, I won't name him, but he comes on stage with an audience of about 100 people and he will call up this child who is around 12 years old and all of them will glorify this kid, 12 year kid who is an option trading wizard, and it's quite fun to watch, but I'm not sure if it is good for the society as a whole.
You know, that's the point. Again, you know, that kid may be making or may not be making money. I mean, even without going into that. But, you know, should we essentially be projecting statements which sort of glorify the entire idea of, you know, a preteen boy essentially trading and making money out of the stock market? I mean, I'm really not sure. I mean, that individual boy might have been smart enough, but then I don't think 12-year kids should be trading on the stock market. So yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. You know, you really don't, again, you know, it comes back to the fact that how do you trust any content that is put out there, especially in an era when so much fake news keeps going around. So I would rather have control over you know, I mean, I would rather invest in a fixed deposit and earn low returns, but at least have control over my money. You know? I mean, I know that my money is in an HDFC bank or in a State Bank of India. So, you see, I think, you know, there was another important reason which I sort of forgot to discuss as to why all these financial influencers took off. See, what happened was that, you know, as we entered into a lockdown, due to several reasons, the interest rates crashed. Okay, so interest rates were at 5% and 6%, and you know, once you pay tax on it and when you adjust for inflation, etc., you were earning a negative return. So in that kind of scenario, you know, you had these influencers coming around and telling you, okay, you know, you can make these money, you know, you can make 10% return in a month, I don't think anyone said 10% in a month, but you can make a reasonable, you know, you can make much more returns than you would ever do on a fixed deposit. So that also sort of led to a lot of people getting influenced by influencers. It definitely led to a lot of people opening demat accounts. You know, people who had earlier got nothing to do with stocks ended up opening demat accounts because it just became, you know, 5% return. It just became very, very low. So everyone sort of, or a lot of people wanted to take on that risk so as to be able to earn a reasonable rate of return. So it was also a function of the times that we were in. Now, you know, if you look at it, you know, banks are now giving 7 to 8% return, and inflation is at around 5%, 5.5%. So at least you are making some money out of fixed deposit. So it will not be, you know, so basically now it's become for influencers, it has become difficult to continue peddling what they were peddling. Plus, crypto has crashed. So that essentially, because a lot of influencers peddled a lot of rubbish, and some of them even peddled crypto FDs. I mean, you know, FD has a certain, the word has a certain meaning attached to it. So you can't just, you know, anything cannot be a real estate FD, crypto FD. I mean, this is all rubbish. So
you know, Vivek, I talked to a couple of guys while doing my story, and apparently some of them even lost more than 40 lakh in the crypto FD thing. That is the vault crisis.
That is the whole point. Nah? It's like, you know, I mean, see, that's the whole thing. If you lost 40 lakhs, you probably had a crore. Okay? Now, if you have a crore to invest, the first thing that any sensible guy would do is asset allocation. Now, asset allocation is by far it's the simplest thing in investing. I mean, if there is one thing that all of us need to know in investing, it is asset allocation. While it is the simplest thing to understand, it is psychologically very, very difficult to implement, right? So asset allocation at a point when FDs were giving 5% return and cryptos were doubling in a day. I mean, a lot of cryptos did. So it just became, you know, it just became very, very difficult for many people. And a lot of these people were young. I mean, they had not seen market cycles. You know, it is important that you see market cycles. Anything that goes up will not keep going up. And the faster it goes up, the faster it falls as well. And these are things, you know, when you sort of hear them, they just sound like, you know, these are just statements. But only when you have gone through such a phase, when you see what can happen. So, you know, I can tell you in 2008, the market went from 21, the stock market, the Sensex, went from almost 21,000 points to 8,000 points during the course of some 8 to 10 months, I think, from January to November. Now, I have, you know, seen that cycle. So, I know that what goes up can come down as well, which is why at any point of time, I wouldn't bet all my money on one asset. I would prefer lower returns than, you know, have an increased risk of losing my money. So, to put it very, very simply, return of capital is as important, if not more important than return on capital. So, this is something that people tend to forget. And when they forget, they fall for all these, you know, financial influencers and crypto and Ponzi schemes and so on and so forth. So,
yeah, that is so important. I mean, FD might give lower return, but it protects your principal. And there is a purpose for FD that I think people have kind of forgotten in the last 1 or 2 years. But yeah. So Vivek, my next question is, how do we control this breed of influencers coming out? How do we regulate them?
It is very, very difficult. And as you can see that the regulator, the Securities and Exchange Board of India, has been struggling with it. I think, you know, there is a very basic problem here. The problem here is that a regulator works 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. Whereas the financial influencer community works 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, right? And, you know, and also a lot of content can disappear. Right. You might make a reel, which may not be, you might say this, and then that might disappear. So how do you regulate something like this? So I think more than the regulator will do what the regulator will do, I think more than that, what is important now is basically mass market campaigns. So the regulator has to sort of put out advertisement, you know, like the RBI does, right? So similarly, the SEBI now has to put out advertisements, which essentially show that how you might end up losing your money by randomly trusting anyone and everyone who comes around telling you that they'll help you increase returns on your money. So that education has to start happening. I'm not very sure as to how the regulator can really regulate something like this. I mean, they might put rules, etc. in place, but, you know, the problem with rules is that how do you even define something as an influencer? You know, from that very basic, who is an influencer and who is not an influencer? So I'll give you a very simple example. So, you know, during this when COVID was on, a lot of these stand-up comedians started podcasts. So they started podcasts and a lot of those podcasts still continue, and in which they talk about a lot of random things. They talk about cricket, they talk about cinema, and so on and so forth. But they would also, plug crypto in between. So is that guy a financial influencer, or he's a stand-up comic who's using YouTube to, whatever, make money? So it becomes very, very difficult to essentially even define as to who is an influencer and who is not an influencer. So while, I mean, this is, obviously they'll have to figure out something. But while they do that, it is also important to educate people at large by putting out mass market campaigns like the RBI has. Or even if you look at the AMFI campaign, Mutual Fund Sahi Hai, which a lot of people have made a lot of fun of. But it is a very, you know, I think as far as mutual funds are concerned, they put out the basic points in a very, very correct way. And they don't, the idea is not to deceive, you know, anywhere. They say SIP karo, they say, you know, to sort of spread your money. They say that, you know, markets will fluctuate, they'll go up and down. So these are the right things to sort of communicate when you want to incentivize people to invest in a mutual fund. So I think that kind of approach has to be taken while designing a communication campaign, which disincentivizes people to essentially buy stuff which all these financial influencers are trying to sell. So,
I mean, that is such a valid point. I think just a couple of years ago, cigarette campaigns were the thing, and whenever you go to a cinema hall, they would flash a person who used to...
Mukesh.
Now there is a need for second version of Mukesh who has lost money through a finfluencer advice. Yes. Somebody needs to come up and talk to people, mass market, and just let people be aware that we should be very cautious with our money. So
yeah,
with that,
see, it's one thing buying a dress out of an influencer on Instagram, right? It is another thing handing over your hard-earned money to some random guy. I mean, you know, even if you buy the most expensive dress, it might probably be 15, 20, 25,000 rupees, right? And you might lose that money. But then, you know, in case of investing, it's you know, the amount and the cost is huge. So.
Yeah, that's true. For a human being, the most important thing must be health and well-being. The second one comes down to our savings. And without our savings, we are essentially nothing, right? So it's a top priority, and I hope the regulator is looking to it and hope everything stabilizes. So there is something the Australian government's regulator are doing, right? So
okay.
They're trying to regulate the finfluencer, and they have very strict regulation.
Yes, to start with at least, and yeah. You know, then they can gradually figure out rules and regulations as well, because that also, see, any regulation time regulation system also takes time to mature. I mean, you can't figure out everything from day one. You know, the system needs to evolve gradually and take, you know, basically different aspects into account.
So with that, I think we are coming to an end of this episode. Thank you once again, Vivek, for coming to our episode, and hope to see you again.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Yeah.
That brings us to the end of today's episode. If you would like to know more about this topic, then you can read an article we wrote about finfluencers recently. We will attach a link below. You can also reach out to me on Twitter. I go by the username @SachinNJ or on LinkedIn using my full name, Sachin Ningthau Khongzam. We would be happy to take your suggestions. That's all from our side. Thanks for tuning in. See you in the next episode.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.